We're talking about toxic lead exposure in children here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Children are especially at risk from lead because of their small size and their developing brains. According to the CDC, lead exposure can affect every system in the body, and even low levels in the blood have been shown to affect a child's IQ. Have you or someone you know been affected by lead pipes in your home? What did you do? In Milwaukee, were you promised lead testing or water filters? Did the city follow up with you if your infant or toddler tested positive for lead? What was the result? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Dipesh Navsaria is an associate professor of pediatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He is president of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Navsaria, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
What have you learned about how lead affects the body?
So we've known a lot about lead in the field of pediatrics for quite some time. Lead was considered to be very useful in really a large variety of ways in our society for actually thousands of years. But then there was a recognition that lead actually had very insidious effects on children in particular because of how it affected their brain development. And that really led to a series of progressive public health measures over time, starting in the 1970s, really, to remove lead from sources. And what we saw was that blood lead levels in children dropped over time and to much lower levels. However, the key thing that everyone needs to know is that there is no such thing as a safe level of lead. So saying that we're that much better is actually not a good thing. It still does affect kids' brains, and it has a permanent effect. So this isn't something that just goes away when you get rid of the lead. The IQ points are already lost. So this is a massive public health issue, and it's an issue for our society in general.
So lead is a neurotoxin. How does it get into the body?
There's a number of ways that lead can get into the body. One of the routes that was fairly common was actually breathing it in, because, of course, we used to have leaded gasoline. I still remember from my childhood when you'd pull into a gas station and they'd ask you, you know, leaded or unleaded.
Yeah.
My own kids look at me blankly when I, when I mention that. They're like, what? What is that? So that was one route. The other was that there was lead in paint, in household paint. And you might think, well, how is paint going to matter? Well, young children, toddlers with very quickly developing brains, they'll paint chips and dust, and they'll put their hands in their mouth, and they'll ingest lead in that way. And sometimes we used to find years ago, and still occasionally do in children who may live in much older homes, cases of lead toxicity where they'd actually see lead chips on x-ray because they'd, wow, they'd been swallowing them. So that was the main ways. And then as we eliminated those, we have discovered that there are still other sources of lead out there. For example, in old water pipes, which is the issue at hand here. And we still occasionally run into lead in, you know, toys and products that are made to less exacting standards, often in other countries, and imported that haven't been tested. Occasionally types of makeup or foods is contamination. But those are kind of intermittent and fewer and far between.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Dipesh Navsaria, who is president of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, a pediatrician with American Family Children's Hospital. We're talking about the effects of lead exposure in children, taking your questions about lead as well and what it can do to the human body at 800-642-1234. Dr. Navsaria, how do you recognize, are there any symptoms of lead exposure?
Here's the thing that really makes this so insidious is that you need to have fairly high levels of lead exposure for there to be symptoms that anyone can pick up, even an experienced physician. And that's why we actually do so much screening for it. At checkups, we will often ask a series of questions, mm-hmm, looking for sources of lead exposure, like the age of the home that children may live in, hobbies that the family might have. You know, solder often has lead if they do electronics or something like that. And all, and then if the answer is yes to any of that, we will check, do a quick blood test to see what the lead level is. If it's above a certain level, then we will talk to public health, and they can have someone come and investigate and try to identify the source and make sure that we are eliminating that source wherever possible.
I'm really familiar with those questionnaires with my own children at the pediatrician's office, such as, was your home built before the 1950s? Do you know if there's lead paint in your home? Those are questions, though, that the parent may not really know the answer to. They may know the age of the home, but not whether there is exposure to lead in the home. Should those questions be the only factor when considering whether you should test a newborn or test an infant?
Yeah, and usually, by the way, as a toddler, we would test because they're the ones that are putting their hands in their mouth and so on. A newborn, we shouldn't see high lead levels unless there's the mother was exposed as well, and that would be another issue. Yeah, I think it's a great question, and what I would say is if there's any doubt in your mind, or if you're working with a population that lives in a community that has older housing stock, or there may not have been as much attention paid to pipe replacement or, you know, paint or other abatement type issues, then just test. I mean, actually, in many settings, it doesn't have to be a blood draw from the arm with a needle. We can actually do a little finger poke and at least do an initial test that way. Now, if that test comes back high, it's entirely possible that even if you clean the finger really well, there was a little skin contamination there and not truly blood having lead in it. So then we'll do the blood draw at that point. But if you're, it's fairly easy and inexpensive to do. So if any doubt, we say just test and make sure.
Let's bring in a call now. Joe is joining us from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
So I'm a landlord, and I had an experience with a child that was one of my tenant's children. He had an elevated blood level, and this was in Minnesota, actually. So the Department of Health, after the second health test came back, they had to intervene and, you know, get me on the path to getting it all corrected. So in retrospect, there's a couple of notes that I'd say for any landlords out there or anybody that lives in an older home, if there's any paint that's loose around windows, door jams, stuff like that, stuff you need to, a little maintenance can go a long way on keeping that stuff sealed up. And then also, what I never knew before this was that actually varnishes and stains can have lead in them as well.
Joe, thank you for that. Dr. Navsaria, it's not just the paint, the varnishes. And Joe says, you know, maintenance can go a long way.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I think sometimes people worry. They say, oh, my goodness, my home was built in 1900 and there's almost definitely lead paint in my home. Do I need to have the whole place stripped down and removed and all? The lead is an issue if the paint is chipping off, or if there's dust getting out towards where children can breathe it in, put their hands in their mouth, all of that. If it's well maintained, if there's new coats of lead free paint, you know, sealing it in, that's actually less of an issue. I will add, for the do it yourself professionals out there, if you know there's lead paint. Please make sure that you're getting it done by a professional.
Talking about the consequences of toxic lead exposure in children with pediatrician Dipesh Navsaria as our guide. Children under 5 are most vulnerable to lead poisoning. What do you want to know about how lead exposure affects children? Are you worried about lead paint or pipes in your home? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Navsaria here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about lead poisoning in children here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So lead was widely used in water pipes until the 50s. Cheap, easy to weld, lead soldering used to connect copper piping was used until the 80s, but it can flake into drinking water, damaging a child's growth and ability to learn. Wisconsin blood lead testing data showed nearly 4,000 children across the state were lead poisoned among kids under five who were tested in 2018. And there are parts of the state like Milwaukee where lead poisoning is more prevalent. If you live in Milwaukee, has your baby or toddler had multiple blood lead tests? What do you want to know about the test results and monitoring? What can you tell us about intervention and prevention efforts in your community? Join in at 800-642-1234. We have pediatrician Dipesh Navsaria who stays with us. Dr. Navsaria, how do pediatricians bring down toxic lead levels if the test has come back positive?
So it depends on the level, really. Most of the levels that I've seen have been at a point where you call public health, they'll come and look at the environment, and the answer is you remove the source, and then you do repeated tests to see if the body is slowly moving it out. It's a fairly significant intervention if you are trying to actually hasten the removal from the body. There are things we can do. I've honestly rarely seen those being done, but there are ways to kind of remove lead from the body through a variety of substances that we can administer, either orally or, if we have to, IV. But again, that's thankfully become much more, rarer in our society.
So in recent decades, the number of children with lead poisoning has come down with much more aggressive environmental restrictions on paint and, of course, to getting lead out of the water. But what needs to happen to eliminate lead poisoning in children?
Well, it means we have to really hunt down these last sources. You know, the paint thing is tricky because people often don't know if they have lead paint in their home. And that's why we ask the questions about the age of the home and, you know, is there chipping, flaking paint, and why we do the testing for those who live in older homes. A lot of the other comes from looking at soil hazards. You know, is there contaminated soil? So maybe your home is fine, but your child is playing outside and there's actually lead from a former or nearby industrial site. And then, of course, the plumbing, which is really the big issue right now, that replacing those lead water pipes is really key because we know that it'll leach into the water that children are exposed to so much.
So explain how it does leach into the water. How does lead get into our drinking water?
Yeah, so there's a variety of ways by which that process can happen. As you mentioned earlier, lead is a very soft, you know, easily manipulable material. So it's very popular in terms of using it on plumbing, either as a solder or welding material or as part of the pipe material itself. Now, often, if many listeners may remember what happened, what was discovered in Flint, Michigan, it wasn't that there was necessarily lead leaching into the water continuously over decades. It was that a change in the Flint water supply caused some of the buildup that was kind of shielding the lead from coming from the pipe material into the water that started to eat away, and now there was lead leaching into the water. And that was a pretty egregious situation because residents said, hang on, my water doesn't look the same. It doesn't taste the same. And they were told, there, it's fine. And the answer was, no, it wasn't fine. So it's sort of a leaching process that it gets in there. And again, it's odorless, it's colorless in small amounts. And that's what makes this so tricky.
So if it's odorless and colorless, how do you find out if there is lead coming out of your tap?
The only real way would be to test it. So if you're concerned or you're suspicious, then having it tested would be the best way to do that. And of course, having your child tested because it may not be the water. It may be another source.
And so what does lead, if you've been drinking lead contaminated water, and I know you're a pediatrician, but what does lead do to pregnant women?
Lead can also transfer across the placenta and affect the baby. We don't focus so much on what happens to adults themselves, pregnant or not, mostly because adult brains are mostly developed. We don't see effects at relatively low levels of lead, although, again, it's not something I'd recommend, whereas we see the biggest changes in kids. But we know that it can certainly transfer across the placenta and affect the developing fetus.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with pediatrician Dipesh Navsaria. He's explaining toxic lead exposure in children and the health consequences. You can join in with your questions about lead. And Milwaukeeans, we want to hear from you. Does your home have lead service lines? Will you be getting them replaced? And what about the bill? How do you go about updating your home to ensure that there isn't lead exposure? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Navsaria, how do you reduce the levels of lead in your drinking water? Is it solely to replace the lines? Or are there other filters, or what can you do?
There are filters and other routes to going about that, and for that I'd refer you to a water quality expert to really talk about the different efficacy of those different methods. I always feel my job is to point out the effects on the body and to screen for it. I will say that one of the interesting things about lead is that a lot of these relatively hard to detect but very real changes are things that we worry about in kids all the time. It's been associated with hyperactivity and other behavioral problems. And again, these IQ drops are very real. So when we think about, gee, why are there these students that seem to struggle so much in school and have these issues, and why is there so much ADHD and this and that? We should be asking ourselves, is this a consequence of things like lead exposure that's causing aggression, that's causing attention problems and an inability to learn? And of course, we as a society bear the costs of all those things in very significant ways. So when people say, oh, it's too expensive to replace lead pipes, I would also argue, actually, it's too expensive not to replace lead pipes.
So you know that there's an impact on the brain. There are things this neurotoxin is doing to the brain. What about the other systems in the body? I'm thinking like the liver, the kidney.
It can affect other parts of the body. Both the liver and the kidney are routes by which the body removes things from the body that shouldn't be there or don't need to be there. We know that there can be some effects there. We haven't really seen long-term problems. It seems to be the brain, the nervous system that's the most sensitive to what happens in terms of lead exposure. I will say, as a historical point, you know, the Romans used to use lead and lead glaze in their plates, and one of the theories out there, we can't go back and test so easily, is that was there some long-term chronic lead exposure back in ancient Rome? And that, by the way, the Latin term for lead is plumbum, which is where our word plumbing comes from. Ah. That's how prevalent it was.
Thank you for that bit of history. We appreciate it. So when you look at this problem and you have a parent who comes in and their child has tested positive and there have been multiple tests and that lead is in that child's bloodstream, that parent can feel really helpless and really guilty. What do you tell them?
Yeah, that's really it's such a challenging situation. And I think parents, you know, they don't do this knowingly, but they too can feel the sense of guilt. You know, I allowed this to happen to my child. So the first thing is to say, look, we found out about it. You know, you brought your child in. You're doing what you can in terms of identifying this. First thing is to move them to a safe water source. That's what we saw in Flint. My friend and colleague, Dr. Hanna Atisha, the pediatrician who identified this in Flint, was moving her patients all to non-city water immediately in response. And then again, get public health involved, let them come and investigate what's going on in the house, where's the source of lead, and then let the abatement process move on from there. Obviously, if the levels are extremely high, then I would refer to my colleagues in toxicology and see how they could help us. But otherwise, we'll follow the levels and the body will remove it. And then we can say, great, over the next, if it goes down adequately over the next 2-3 months, then okay, wonderful.
What kind of therapies do you refer out then when these tests come back positive? You know there's going to be an impact on the brain. Where do you refer?
Usually for relatively mild cases, we we talk about things that families can and should do at home, reading together on a regular basis, playing together, all the things that actually are great for kids' brain development in general. If we are seeing significant exposure, then of course I can refer to local birth to three services, which is what we would do for any kind of possible or known developmental delay, and let people do assessments and follow them over time, as well as provide the needed therapies that are needed. That's the thing. We can't undo what LED itself did, but we can certainly move things up in terms of positive development.
Dr. Nevsaria, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Dr. Dipesh Nevsaria is an associate professor of pediatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's president of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Coming up, we have the superintendent of the Milwaukee Waterworks to discuss the status of lead service line replacement, a program that will take decades to accomplish. That's after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the hazards of lead service lines in Milwaukee that deliver water from city water mains and have caused a water contamination crisis. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So to date this year, the city has replaced 422 lead service lines. That's out of 1,000 it sets as an annual goal. Milwaukeeans, we want to hear from you. Does your home have lead service lines? Will you be getting them replaced? And can you afford the bill? We're at 800-642-1234. Karen Detmer is superintendent of Milwaukee Water Works, a licensed professional engineer. She oversees all aspects of the largest public utility operation in Wisconsin, and she's on the American Water Works Association Water Utility Council. Karen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Give us a snapshot, if you will, of how many lead service lines there are across Milwaukee.
Sure. So we have approximately 73,000 lead service lines within our service area. And currently in 2020, our goal was to replace 1,100 lead service lines. In 2019, we replaced a little over 1,000, actually 1,002. And that was meeting our goal. So we're slowly inching up our goals to try to get every lead service line out of the ground and replaced with copper.
And so certainly it doesn't look like you would meet the goal this year, as we're, you know, more than halfway through the year and you've got 422 replaced. How long does it take to replace one lead service line?
Well, it takes a little, it really depends on the contractor. So we have several contractors that we work with, and some of our contractors are a little more experienced. They have multiple crews out working, and it can take, depending on the type of property and the complexity of the underground utilities in the area, it can take less than a day to a little over a day, or, you know, 12, 14 hours. So, but, you know, when we talk about being a little bit behind schedule to this year than we have in years past, the 422 is not terribly off base on where we have been in past years. As you can imagine, we work primarily in the construction season, and we often have numbers that are a little bit lower in the spring, ramping up to multiple lead service lines being replaced per day, up to, you know, 50 to 100 per week in the summer and fall season. Now, this year, of course, was quite different because of COVID-19. When we do a lead service line replacement, there are several individuals that have to enter the property and connect that replaced copper service line to the meter within the home or within the building. So we wanted to take extra precautions this year as information was coming out very quickly on the spread of COVID-19.
And so do you rely on contractors for this work? Because you have hundreds of employees at Milwaukee Waterworks. How many are devoted to the work of replacing lines?
We do have several crews, at least 15 individuals that we have in our distribution crews that are devoted to lead service line replacement, as well as our lead service line replacement team that includes program assistants, distribution managers, to make sure that we are managing the contracting work. Now, our employees are really only able to work on the utility-owned portion of the lead service line. It's required that a plumber is contracted to do the interior work.
So how do you prioritize this work? Because with 73,000 lines to be replaced, you have to certainly make some concessions. Where do you put the focus?
We prioritize it based on risk. So previously, when we were looking at lead reduction efforts in our water service, and I should note that lead reduction efforts in water at the tap has begun since 1985. 1986, the Safe Drinking Water Act came out, and of course, Milwaukee Water Works was aware of that pending legislation on a federal level requiring lead reduction efforts, and began studying how to reduce lead safely within the water supply. And in as early as 1996, we began initiating corrosion control treatment. So with that corrosion control treatment, we add phosphoric acid to the water itself, and that inhibits the lead from getting into the water supply. Now, of course, when the water is sitting stagnant in the pipe, or warmer water can promote a little bit more of that corrosion. So we want to be careful about instructing individuals to flush the water if it's been sitting stagnant for over 6 hours to ensure that they have some fresh water supply from our distribution system entering their tap. Now, when we talk about prioritizing, we know through studies that disrupting the lead service line, cutting it, for example, to do a water main replacement, or if there has been a leak and a repair needs to be completed, if the curb stop, so the valve that is significant between the utility-owned portion and the property-owned portion, if that has been... If it has deteriorated and needs to be replaced, we know that cutting that lead service line can promote additional lead to get into the water at the tap and reduce that ability for that scale that's built up.
Oh, because you're disrupting it.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yeah. So we prioritize by ensuring that it's mandated. It's a requirement for a full lead service line replacement to occur if there's a water main replacement project, or if the lead service line has failed at all, by way of meaning that the connection to the meter has failed, the connection to the curb stop has failed, or if it's found to be leaking. We've also prioritized child cares and schools. So it is a requirement in the city of Milwaukee that if a child care facility opens up, and this is licensed or certified, which can, you know, a certified child care can be as little as 3 children
in a home. Uh-huh.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is required that that lead service line get replaced as well. And that is at the full cost of the city of Milwaukee.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Karen Detmer, who is superintendendent of the Milwaukee Water Works, talking about the replacement of lead service lines, a project that could take nearly 3 generations to complete, and taking your questions about lead service lines. Are you confident in the city's plan to replace lead pipes? Why or why not do you worry about what to do in the meantime before pipes are replaced? It's 800-642-1234. So, Karen, how much does the homeowner pay for having a service line replaced?
So currently, if it is mandated for the property to have the lead service line replaced, again, if there has been a leak or it's on a water main replacement project, the homeowner, and this is for 1 to 4 family properties, is responsible for up to $1,754. And that's kind of an odd number because it's based on a construction index that changes every March 1st. We are working on a plan to expand that for property owners that are interested in having their lead service line replaced and what we call owner initiated. If it isn't mandated, but that property owner wants to be proactive. And I'm working with our local elected officials right now on determining what sort of cost share the city could provide in those instances.
Because with owner-initiated situations, there's no help. The owner pays the full cost of the contractor and the work. Is that right?
Well, the owner pays the full cost of the privately owned portion. So from the curb stop to the water meter, the utility always pays for the curb stop to the water main.
So Karen, you know, how does someone know whether their house or apartment has lead pipes bringing water to their house?
Well, we have full instructions. We do have an inventory of the public side on our website at milwaukee.gov/water. And that inventory is very extensive and very reliable to know if the lead service line is in existence from the curb stop to the water main. But there are questions still about the privately owned portion, and we're working on building that inventory. What we do is we assume that if the public side is lead, that the private side was lead, because we want to be in an abundance of caution and ensuring that we have our records complete and are as conservative as possible. But property owners themselves can actually check with a magnet. So they can kind of scratch off a little bit of the dust and, you know, exterior of the pipe to see if it's silver or if it is a copper color. If it's a copper color, then, you know, we assume that it's copper. If it's silver, that doesn't necessarily mean it's lead, but you can check with a magnet to see if the magnet sticks or not and determine if it is lead. And again, we have full instructions on how to use that magnet and determine if your lead if your service line is lead on our website.
If the magnet sticks, what happened? What does that mean?
If the magnet sticks, that actually means it's not lead. So it may be galvanized, and there are, you know, some galvanized materials that have some component of lead in them. So we want to be careful about those materials as well.
What have you learned from Flint?
What have we learned from Flint? Well, I'll give an example. I heard Dr. Napsaria discuss Flint and how they changed their water supply. And that's exactly correct. There are many unknowns about Flint or misinformation about Flint and why the lead service lines became an issue. And it really was that change in the water chemistry that promoted corrosion on those lead service lines. Now, we are about to bring the city of Waukesha online with Milwaukee Water. And in anticipation of that, we have now gone through a corrosion control study to ensure that our water is not going to negatively affect those pipes.
Pausing there with Karen Detmer, Superintendent of Milwaukee Water Works. Have you or someone you know been affected by lead pipes in your home? What did you do? What are your questions for the superintendent about the city's lead problem? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with the superintendent of Milwaukee Water Works, Karen Detmer. We're checking in on the city's lead contamination and the work to replace lead service lines in the city. It could take generations to accomplish as the city works to replace 73,000 lead service lines. Karen, let's pick up where we left off. You were explaining bringing Waukesha into the fold of Milwaukee Water Works. Tell us about that conversion.
Yes, so Waukesha formerly was using their groundwater, an aquifer that has now been confirmed to have radium contamination. And in cooperation with them, we have an agreement to provide water service from our freshwater supply from Lake Michigan to Waukesha. And in an abundance of caution and really being held up as a national standard to what you should be doing as a water utility if you're changing your water source, they underwent a 2-year study to to ensure that the Milwaukee water, as the chemistry coming out of Lake Michigan and the chemistry for what we treated for corrosion control was not going to negatively affect their lead service lines in their community. And we had very good results, and the benefits of Milwaukee water being provided to that community has been shown through that 2-year study to not negatively affect the lead service lines. I also want to note that, we work very closely with our local health department on the recommendations that health officials have. And the requirement for the city of Milwaukee to provide water filters, NSF 53 certified water filters, to every participant in our lead service line replacement program has been in existence since 2017. So that was a direct result of some of the studies that we've learned since Flint as well.
As you said, you work closely with the Milwaukee Health Department on this issue. And recently, the Milwaukee Health Commissioner, Jeanette Kowalik, resigned from her position. What does that mean for ensuring these lead programs and abatements stay on track and that homeowners get serviced?
We have had a longstanding relationship with our health department and with the staff at the health department. And, really since the early 1990s when cryptosporidium outbreak occurred, we collaborated with the health department as well as other local water leaders, Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District, the State Department of Health Services, the State Department of Natural Resources, to convene an interagency Clean Water Advisory Council. And that council meets regularly to discuss a variety of issues, including lead. And I have full confidence that that will continue under the new leadership of the health department.
We're talking with Karen Detmer. She's a licensed professional engineer, superintendent of the Milwaukee Water Works. We're discussing water issues in our state's largest city. With your questions, 800-642-1234. Karen, getting back to Waukesha for a moment, last month the EPA announced Waukesha would receive a $137 million loan to build the infrastructure to get water from Milwaukee to Waukesha. What is the role of these federal dollars?
Well, that particular program has been in existence for a while, the loan for infrastructure improvements. Now, I think there absolutely is a role for federal dollars and state dollars for lead service line replacements as well. The state has recently announced earlier this year that they will be adding an additional $63 million to provide to utilities for lead service line replacements. And we're very excited about that program. We plan to take full advantage to offset the costs here on a local level. And I think there really is an opportunity and a need for more federal and state investment in lead service line replacement and infrastructure improvement overall.
I'm just wondering, amid the pandemic and with so many dollars flowing toward combating coronavirus and state tax revenue dropping precipitously, are you worried that the funding will be there when you need it to be able to make these programs happen and to ensure that the service lines are being replaced?
Absolutely. I am concerned about that. We have a state revenue issue and we have a city budget issue. We do have the benefit at Milwaukee Water Works that we are providing a service and we're regulated by the Public Service Commission under utility requirements to be financially sustainable. But if we don't have that funding coming from the federal government to the state and being disseminated to the local water utilities, then we will directly see that impact on our rates. And we're very concerned about that because I want to make sure that our water remains affordable in the future.
So there is a plan proposed that would evenly distribute revenue from water rates. So what can you tell us about this plan?
Well, are you referring to the lead service line replacement use of water rates?
Yeah, well, I mean, because, you know, the price of lead service lines has increased, how much has affected, you know, the cost of replacing them is going up. And in terms of distributing revenue from water rates, you know, how do you do that evenly across the board, fairly?
Sure. So the state legislature had approved Act 137, which allows for water utilities to use rate revenue to provide a grant of 50% of the lead service line replacement cost. So that's the private side only. As I mentioned, the utility is always responsible for the utility-owned portion. And that rate revenue could be used for a 50% cost grant and a 50% cost loan. Now, I noted that currently our cost share for residential properties is limited to $1,754. And the average cost is a little over $5,000 for the private section. So we are actually, in the city of Milwaukee, doing better than that 50% grant opportunity. And for that reason, we haven't taken advantage of the opportunity to use rate revenue for those lead service line replacements. We're currently using our city general fund for that cost, which some of which will be offset by that DNR funding that will become available later this year.
So at this pace of your goals of replacing lead service lines, 1,000, 1,100 a year, I mean, it's looking at, what, almost 70-some years to, you know, to replace all of these lines, generations to resolve this problem. Are you looking at ways to cut down the time or expedite this?
Yeah, we have a plan right now that outlines what it would cost on an annual basis for the property owners as well as the city if the current funding opportunity is maintained. And we have that broken down on a replacement cycle of 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and 50 years, and what those costs would be and what funding would be needed on an annual basis. Now, funding is the main issue, and the more funding that we can get toward lead service line replacements from the federal and state level, the faster we can plan to have these lead service lines replaced. As it is with our current budget situation in the city of Milwaukee, as well as in the state, we are forced to look at this on an annual basis based on funding availability.
In the last few seconds we have with you, what is the greatest challenge facing Milwaukee Water? What do you grapple with?
Oh, the greatest challenge. in the wake of COVID-19, I would say, it still remains infrastructure funding. I have to bring attention to the fact that I've been extremely impressed with my staff's response to COVID-19. We have been able to come to work every day and provide water service to our customers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I really thought that would be one of our biggest concerns. But infrastructure funding remains to be my biggest concern as we look forward to still providing water service at an affordable rate to our customers in the future.
Karen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Karen Detmer is superintendent of Milwaukee Water Works. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.